Monitor music by the Baroque Brass, Day Tripper. Stay with it on the weekend. Brad Crandall here, and it has been quite a week. President Nixon's whirlwind tour of Europe, the worst snowstorm in a century for the city of Boston, and America's space program slowed down by the common cold. Well, nothing slows down Monitor Music. Leapy Lee catches the mood of the weekend singing, "It's All Happening."
You are my reason for living. Nothing can take our love away. You are my one desire. You set my heart afire with everything you do and say. It's all happening for you and me, you and me. Now you said you'd come on back to me, can't you see? We never thought that a love could be so wonderful for you and me, you and me. It's all happening. Yeah.
occasionally I take trips at night, and I find myself driving and looking at the white line. You know, this becomes a little hazardous. Well, I remember occasion when I found myself on the grass. I was, you know, really shocked. It was only the horns of the other cars.
When you're tired, don't drive. When you're rested, but the monotony of driving makes you drowsy, pull over, take a break, and take two for the road. Two no-dose action aids. They've got the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, yet they're not habit-forming. No-dose action aids. No car should be without them.
For almost 2 weeks, a California-bound airliner with 35 persons aboard has been missing. Despite a thorough search spread over a large area of mountains and valleys which mark the California-Nevada borders, nothing has been found. For a report on this strange story, here is Monitor reporter Gene DiCardo, NBC News in San Francisco.
Since February 18th, a DC-3 airliner has been missing on a flight from Hawthorne to Southern California. There were 35 persons aboard when the plane went down in snow-covered mountains along the Nevada-California border. Since that time, military and civilian planes have been scouring the area desperately. So far, nothing. Civil Air Patrol Colonel Jim Helm in Hawthorne, Nevada, explains the problem.
Well, due to the deep snow and the bad weather we've had, we have flown a lot of hours. But due to the deep snow, we just haven't been able to see anything. Actually, I'm sure we've been over it a lot of times.
Three dozen planes of the CAP and Air Force have been in the air when weather conditions permitted. The missing DC-3 is tabbed a gambler special because it was on a return leg of an overnight casino junket when it vanished shortly after takeoff during a pre-dawn snowstorm. The search is covering a vast area, 40 by 100 miles.
You can't figure a straight line and figure to be on it because of the mountains and the snowstorms that was in the vicinity. So we have to take an area approximately 40 miles wide to cover the valley because he would be trying to go down the valley.
The $64 question, what are the remaining chances for the 35 persons on that missing craft?
There could be, yes. They have lived for months in Alaska. So, and these people, in the reports, they didn't have food, but they had blankets. So there is a possibility.
But admittedly, it's a slim one. Gene DiCardo in San Francisco, reporting for Monitor.
Certainly one of the strangest aircraft mishaps on record, and to this hour, nothing new to report on it. But the snow-covered mountains separating Nevada and California include some of the most rugged terrain in the country, so chances for survival are pretty slim. From the association. At home or away, always stay on the Monitor Beacon.
month of March is Red Cross Month, and once again, Red Cross desperately needs your help. Last year, the cost of helping tens of thousands of families affected by domestic and foreign disasters soared higher than the year before. And the expense of providing health and welfare assistance to almost a million servicemen and their families at home and overseas rose with ever-increasing requests for Red Cross service. At the same time, other essential Red Cross programs in blood research, water safety, and first aid, youth, and nursing continued. The money required came from people like you, and over 2 million Red Cross volunteers stretched your dollars as far as they could go. This year's needs are greater than ever before. Red Cross needs your help and your contribution. Support our servicemen. Support Red Cross services with a check to your local Red Cross chapter.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York. Monitor continuing at exactly 17 minutes after the hour. This week, the American Medical Association offered the following information. By age 70, a typical martini drinker consumes 1.5 quarts of vermouth and 510 gallons of gin. Now, that's what you call a very dry statistic.
We are wandering, we are wandering, like the shadows of the sun. Never quite the same at evening as when morning had begun. Tasting wine from many vineyards, testing truth from many shores, looking into funhouse mirrors, looking out of prison doors. Upon a table, charting phases of the moon, tearing cobwebs from illusions, spinning new ones in their place, finding solace in the chalice, or forgiveness in a answers from the rainbows in refrigerated jars, staring voiceless at the ceiling as the jasmine candles burn, trading gold dust in for mushrooms, no deposit, no return.
At Ames. Now, Monitor Sports with a look at the week ahead. On Tuesday, the $100,000 added Flamingo Stakes at Hialeah, the $60,000 Professional Bowlers Association Open in Milwaukee, and the South American Swimming Championships in Cali, Colombia. Thursday, the Florida Citrus Open Golf Tournament in Orlando and the start of Major League Baseball's exhibition game season. Friday, the NCAA College Division Basketball Tournament, Regional Games, and the Long Island Tennis Tournament. Saturday, the $100,000 added Santa Anita Handicap, the 1969 Sport Camping Vacation and Travel Show at the New York Coliseum, two track meets, the IC4A at Madison Square Garden, and the USTFF Championships at Milwaukee. Australia's world bantamweight boxing champion Lionel Rose defends his title against Britain's Alan Rudkin in Melbourne, and Grand Prix Midget Auto Racing at the Houston Astrodome. And that's what is and will be in sports. This is Percy Faith's chorus and orchestra, the song Stormy. Capitol Hill Monitor, personal profiles of members of Congress to help you become more familiar with the men who represent you in the nation's capital. Here's Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
The concern now being voiced about hunger in this land of opportunity is largely an outgrowth of hearings started last year by a special congressional committee headed by Senator George McGovern. The soft-spoken South Dakota lawmaker won a major victory a few days ago when the Senate voted to give the committee an extra $100,000 to continue the exposure of starvation.
I don't mean to say that we've stampeded the country behind the cause of ending hunger, but we have awakened many, many people. The hearing room has been jammed day after day for those hearings. I would like to suggest that a couple of years ago, or when I first became interested in this subject, it would have been very difficult to get the kind of interest that we seem to have developed very quickly.
McGovern was born in 1922 at Avon, South Dakota, where his father was the village Methodist minister.
Our living room was a kind of a Union Station in that community. I remember my father frequently being paid in vegetables and with chickens and sacks of potatoes, things of that kind. I grew up in the 20s and the 30s, and this was a very difficult time in an agricultural state like South Dakota. It was very difficult all across the country. I don't ever recall feeling that we were poor, but as I think back on it, I know we were.
As a boy, McGovern was withdrawn and shy and didn't have many friends.
Most of the members of our family had a problem with shyness. I don't know why that was true, because my father was a rather outspoken individual and a very forceful and direct man, and my mother had a outgoing, friendly personality.
But two teachers took an interest in young George, persuaded him to take up debating, which he did, becoming one half of a state championship team. One of the team's few losses was to a pair of girls, one of whom McGovern later married. During World War II, he flew 35 B-24 missions over Italy and almost didn't make it back.
On the last mission that I flew, we took over 100 shrapnel hits in our airplane. There were more holes in the plane than there were pieces of aircraft left. By the time we got to the ground, we had two of our people injured on that flight. The war ended a few days later in Western Europe.
After the war, McGovern taught college, was elected to the House, then the Senate in 1962. And finally, last summer, he sought the Democratic nomination for president, a goal he has not abandoned.
I think it's too early to know what the situation will be like in 1972. We don't know how the Democratic candidate possibilities are going to shape up. We have no way of assessing how Mr. Nixon's going to do. But I think having made the decision at the last minute in 1968 to make the challenge, that I wouldn't want to close that door either. I think that if the historical situation is such that it looks like a bid on my part would make sense, that I wouldn't hesitate to try it.
George McGovern, senator from South Dakota, the commander of the new war against hunger, and a man who may yet have a bigger Democratic future. Paul Duke for Monitor on Capitol Hill.
Frank Chaxfield's orchestra. Stay on the sunny side with Monitor every weekend nationwide. WSJS Winston-Salem, North Carolina is NBC Radio for the Piedmont Golden Triangle. Brad Crandall, your host, back shortly.
Apollo 9 lifts off tomorrow morning. Dean Mell and Jay Barbary bring you complete details here on NBC Radio.
Brad Crandall. Women were in the news this week in two widely separated fields. On Wall Street, an investment firm in the New York Stock Exchange chose a lady president to make stock exchange history. And at Santa Anita, the first lady jockey debuted. But she trailed the field. I guess I'll have to change that old sports expression to nice gals finish last. In music, a lady who's a front runner always leads the pack and finishes strong. Barbara.
I met a boy called Frank Mills on September 12th, right?
With Bob Considine, brought to you by Mutual of Omaha, the company that pays.
Just about everybody in this country of ours knows generally how we plan to get our astronauts to the moon. There aren't too many ways, you know. The Russians don't think much of our method. They've come up with something different, another approach. I'll be back with it. First, here's a reminder from Mutual of Omaha.
Seems you pay more each time you go shopping. Seems you pay more when you're at the store. And though high prices may never be stopping, there is a way to help your money buy more.
You don't have to be told things cost more today. You know it every time you pay a bill, even when you go window shopping. And medical costs, hospital and doctor care are no exception. To make sure you're not one of the 9 out of 10 people who haven't enough health insurance, call the Mutual of Omaha man in your own community. His company pays 30% more of its premium income and benefits than the combined average of the next 24 companies. That's one reason why Mutual of Omaha is known as the company that pays, and a good reason for you to be protected by such a company. Remember, in all the world, there is only one Mutual of Omaha.
The Russians have a way of their own in the matter of landing men on the moon. Our plan, as you know, is to send the 3-stage Apollo spacecraft into lunar orbit, break loose the 2-man lunar landing module, and let it drift down to the moon, while the command module, with the 3rd astronaut in it, keeps circling round and round the moon. After 20 or 24 hours on the moon's surface, collecting rock samples, planning electronic eavesdroppers and such, our 2 lunonauts will blast themselves off its surface, find the circling command module, climb into it, and the 3 will go back to Earth. The Russians, on the other hand, have decided that their way is better, and presumably are proceeding along those different lines. They'll first shoot a 3-man command module into Earth orbit with its attached service module. Then they'll send up a 2nd rocket loaded with several types of rocket engines. This will be unmanned. When the orbital paths of the 2 Russian vehicles correspond, a hatch will be opened in the Soviet command module, and 2 of the 3 cosmonauts will float out, brandishing tools that any automobile mechanic or plumber would recognize on sight. Those 2 will bolt the unmanned number 2 vehicle to the manned vehicle, then climb back to their couches in the command module and close the hatch. In time, the portion that has been bolted will fire one of its many engines, and the whole package will start for the moon. As it nears the moon's surface, huge spindly legs will spread out from the bottom portion, and its slow descent engines will spew flames. It will be a much, much bigger and much heavier object than our lunar landing vehicle. When it finally settles down and its descent engines are turned off, it will stand perhaps as tall as a 5 or 6 or even 7-story building. The 3 cosmonauts will lower nylon ladders and climb down from their lofty perch to the ground. They're expected to remain on the surface of the moon for 8 hours, collecting bags of surface debris, installing communications and telemetry devices, and attending to other odd jobs.
It has been written and not denied that the first trio of cosmonauts to land will nail a large red hammer and sickle flag to the face of the moon and also implant a bust of Lenin. The three cosmonauts will then unbolt things and use the big spent husk of the auxiliary rocket as their launching platform. And since they'll be all together in their command module by that time, there will be no need of a rendezvous with another spacecraft in lunar orbit. They'll shuffle off directly to the Soviet Union nonstop. Our side looked into this method of getting men to the moon some time ago, but we finally settled on the system that will get its first real test during the Apollo 9 flight. We may have guessed wrong, of course. If we did, and the Russians get there ahead of us, well, I hope our boys will at least paint a mustache on the bust of Lenin. This is Bob Considine for Monitor. Now, here's something new from Mutual of Omaha.
Seems you pay more each time you go shopping. Seems you pay more when you're at the store.
The cost of living keeps going up, and the cost of going to the hospital is rising even faster. But there is an answer. A new hospital surgical protection plan from Mutual of Omaha. It pays more in benefits. That's why it'll pay you to call your nearby man from Mutual of Omaha. The company that pays.
On the Line with Bob Considine is brought to you each weekend by Mutual of Omaha and its life insurance affiliate, United of Omaha, here on the Monitor Beacon.
Where do you find it nowadays? That good old family fun, such fun. And where do you go for peace a supreme? Really, there is only one place. Go, go, go to Shakey's. Enjoy that family atmosphere. Go, go, go to Shakey's. Pizza that's perfection is made right here.
Come out to the new Shakey's Pizza Parlor just south of Latham Circle on Route 9. Entertainment on Tuesday through Sunday nights, live banjo and piano, 21 varieties of pizza supreme. Shoppers, tonight give the whole family a treat in the old-time atmosphere of Shakey's Pizza Parlor, adjacent to Latham Corner Shopping Center, south on Route 9. Shakey's is family fun for everyone.
Pizza, banjo, rinky-dink piano! Shakey's!
Monitor once again, the time 16 minutes before the hour. If all goes well, the next chapter of America's space program will begin with the launch of Apollo 9 tomorrow. On the fourth day of the scheduled 10-day flight, astronaut Russell Schweikert will walk in space. For a closer look at that space stroll, here's Peter Hackus, NBC News.
Among the principal objectives of the Apollo 9 spacewalk to be made by astronaut Russell Schweikert is the retrieval of some small panels he'll find attached outside. There are five in all, one on the lunar module, one on the outside of the capsule itself, and three on the service module, that tank-like unit with the big engine skirt that's attached behind the capsule. Each of the little packages is about 6 inches square, easily removable when Rusty Schweikert pulls a ring, first making sure the panel is hooked to a tether line, so in case he lets go, it won't just float away in space. Why are the five little packets so important? Well, they're called thermal testers. Each one of the five has two little exposed panels to see how they react to the firing of the engines outside. For example, one of the packages contains a small piece of the same quarter-inch glass that's on the outside of the capsule window. Another has a piece of lunar module window glass. On the ground, they'll be analyzed for soot and dust, possibly to prevent some future window soot problem. The packages contain small squares of different kinds of paint and different aluminized coatings to see how badly they're burned, scorched, or seared during the firing of thrusters and when the forward rocket removes the launch escape tower. Laboratory studies of these packets after the flight will help design experts on future flights. Just retrieving the packages will help Rusty Schweikert show that useful work can be done in outer space. This is Peter Hackus, NBC News reporting.
Complete coverage of the Apollo 9 flight on NBC Radio and Television. Launch time now scheduled for 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. First reports on NBC at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here's the man whose name will never appear on the Sixth Sense stamp.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Lonely table just for one. In a bright and crowded room. While the music has begun. To memories in the room. Though the music's still the same, it has a bittersweet refrain. So play the song the way it used to be.
Sometime around 3 o'clock at night. I had fallen asleep and all of a sudden waking up and seeing myself in the left lane and seeing a semi-tractor trailer coming straight at me. I don't know what woke me up. Maybe it was the truck.
When you're tired, don't drive. When you're rested, but the monotony of driving makes you drowsy, pull over, take a break, and take two for the road. Two no-dose action aids. They've got the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, yet they're not habit-forming. No-dose action aids. No car should be without them.
With March here, can income tax time be far behind? In a word, no. And citizens in Canberra, Australia, were furious this week about a new tax on lavatory equipment. But they haven't lost their humor about it. They call it the lavy levy. Wash my hands of that joke. Here's Spanky and our gang, and she's mine.
Another girl.
Sweden has become a haven for American draft dodgers and military deserters. The Swedish government has officially decided to give asylum, aid, and assistance to some 200 Americans who have fled the armed forces in protest to the war in Vietnam. Unlike deserters, draft dodgers were previously deported, but now they also are being given asylum. A look at the life of an American deserter in Sweden and his future in this report from Alan Simon, NBC News, Stockholm.
About 50 of the 250 American deserters who came to Sweden have now returned. Those remaining still complain about poor housing, no jobs, insecurity, and rival deserter organizations. Swedish officials are worried about the growing number of deserters who are using and selling narcotics. An exception is 23-year-old George Meals from Atlanta, Georgia. Here 1 year and more fortunate than most deserters. With a student loan, Meals attends the University of Stockholm and has a room in a dormitory.
Swedish hospitality is not anywhere comparable to Southern hospitality, something like that. I think a lot of deserters would like to be treated like other foreign refugees that are here in Sweden.
Such as?
The Czechs. And Sweden has historically taken in deserters and refugees from armed conflicts before. We don't have political asylum. We just have humanitarian permission to stay because of the possibilities of serving extremely long jail sentences or being sent to Vietnam and the possibility of being killed.
George Meals also offers some deserter views on what happens when peace does come to Vietnam.
If a general amnesty is offered, I think you'll find a lot of deserters going back. Now, on the other hand, if a token sentence is offered, say 6 months or a year, I think that you get different reactions, and this will probably be because a lot of deserters feel that deserting is not actually a crime and that they shouldn't be punished, and probably a lot of people would refuse to go back under these conditions.
Vietnam resistor George Meals from Atlanta, Georgia, now in Sweden. This is Alan Simon, NBC News, Stockholm.
The general court-martial trial of the first Army Vietnam deserter to return from Sweden opened this week at Fort Dix, New Jersey, and will continue Monday. The soldier said he hopes his trial will be a test case for other defectors now in Sweden who are afraid to return home. Tonight on Monitor, hear a special half-hour report on President Nixon's journey to Europe. It's an in-depth analysis of the president's historic journey, which covered five nations and the Vatican. Anchorman for this special program will be NBC News correspondent Ray Shearer, with reports from a battery of NBC European correspondents. Hear President Nixon's journey to Europe, a special report later this evening on Monitor. Thank you. Cat Williams Orchestra playing I Say a Little Prayer. Keep pace with the fast-moving world through NBC Monitor News on the Hour. It's next, so stay tuned. I'm Brad Crandall.
I want to thank the following good citizens of this city for their kind contributions to us. Mr. Rupert, thank you for leaving your key under the doormat. We were all set to jimmy your window, but you made it easy, and we are truly grateful. Mr. Parisi, our thanks go to you for not leaving a light on. And with all that mail piled up, we knew you were away. We hope you spent your vacation in as nice a place as we spent your money. Thank you, one and all, for continuing to ignore the 10 burglary safeguards that the city put out and for not dialing 911 to turn us in. Support your local burglar. Why should he work as hard as you?
Operation Safe City.
Big, bigger, better. The Big Wilson Show. Weekdays 9 to noon on WNBC Radio 660 New York.